So I'd like to begin with advertising. So I have two graduate students finishing this year, Teodor Milanov and Shanhua Tseng. Both are very good, and Milanov is a specialist in in integrable hierarchies. And I'm not going to talk about his work, but I'm talking today about work of Shanhua Tseng, some part of his PhD thesis. But anyway, both are very good, so those who have postdoc positions, they're thus informed. And and I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me and giving me an opportunity to give this, not 40 minutes, but just an hour talk on the subject. Therefore, it is my talk is after the work of Shanhua Tseng, and it is about orbifold quantum Riemann-Roch theorem, and the project, at least this part of his work, is actually was very modest originally, because the goal was to generalize to the case of orbifolds some theorem of Tom Coates and myself, which we call quantum Riemann-Roch theorem, and which actually expresses some kind of twisted Gromov-Witt invariance in terms of ordinary Gromov-Witt invariance. And so the goal was to, well, to extend it to orbifold case, orbifold target spaces, and it was needed for some other purposes in his project, but it turns out actually to be quite interesting and bring up some new elements and also some general mathematical nature, and I'd like to talk about this and explain what is this general mathematical interest in this project. But so let me start with explaining what is quantum Riemann-Roch itself, supposed to be mechanical. Okay, so in general, generally speaking, this quantum Riemann-Roch theorem deals with the following situation. Suppose that we have some target Keller, or almost Keller manifold X, and of course it has its Gromov-Witt invariance, but we can consider also a vector, complex vector bundle over X, and fix some multiplicative characteristic class of complex vector bundles. And using this data, we can twist somehow the construction of Gromov-Witt invariance. I will tell you later how. And the goal is to express the twisted Gromov-Witt invariance in terms of untwisted ones. Role of this, so the motivation for this problem of twisting Gromov-Witt invariance in computing is there are several goals that are quite well known. So for instance, such twisted Gromov-Witt invariance occur when you consider X embedded into a larger space with negatively curved normal bundle, and ask what is the contribution of curves in X into Gromov-Witt invariance of the ambient space, so this is local Gromov-Witt invariance, and also the dual situation when there is a bundle over X and its section defines a complete intersection in X, and you're asking what are at least genus zero Gromov-Witt invariance of that complete intersection in terms of Gromov-Witt invariance of ambient space X. And in this way, therefore, this twisted invariance are needed in various mirror formulas. Also, when we deal with fixed point localization, where X plays the role of some fixed point submanifold in a larger space, then this twisted Gromov-Witt invariance also occur in fixed point localization formulas. And in particular, when X is a point, so then this twisted invariance reduced to Hodge integrals, and they kind of object of classical interest. Well, anyway, let me explain first what is this quantum Riemann-Roch before going to the orbifold situation when X, the target, is an orbifold. And I will first pay attention only to the formula itself, the formal aspect of what's going on here, and then later explain the geometry, what is the meaning of Gromov-Witt invariance, what kind of invariance we are talking about. So, therefore, as as a formula, this quantum Riemann rho deals with generating functions for Gromovitz invariants, which are so the functions that I will denote d, thinking of the total descendant potential, or maybe it should be denoted z, referring to talks yesterday. So the characteristic class, multiplicative characteristic class, in general, it is exponential of the general additive characteristic class, the components of the Chern character with some coefficients. And so eventually I will have a family depending on S of such functions, and they will be considered as elements of some Fock space. The goal will be to express ds in terms of d0, so when s is 0, and because there is some Fock space involved, means that some formalism is behind, and so let me explain this formalism. There is some quantum mechanical language there. So the formalism begins, to formulate, therefore, to state quantum Riemann rho formula, I need some language, which starts with some symplectic space going on then to Fock spaces. So therefore, the starting ingredient is the vector space H, which is in real life is a cohomology of the target with rational coefficients. Also, there is some non-zero vector here, which is in the real life is unit element in the cohomology. The multiplication multiplicative structure in the cohomology doesn't play any role in the formalism, but it plays important role in the formula, in the quantum Riemann rho formula. So therefore, I will denote this element by 1 as it is in the real life. And one more ingredient, it is non-degenerate. Actually, it's a superspace in general, and there is a symmetric non-degenerate bilinear form, which in real life is Poincaré pairing. So given this data, one constructs some infinite dimensional space, a loop space, which is the space of Lorentz series in one indeterminates, one over z, therefore it means that z series going to infinitely many times the negative direction and polynomial in the positive direction, and with vector coefficients in that vector space H, and to introduce a symplectic form on this space in this way, given two such Lorentz series, we define the scalar product by this residue formula. So we take f of minus z, g of z pair their coefficients using the Poincaré pairing, and then take the residue. And so it's easy to see because of this minus, it's an anti-symmetric form, it's non-degenerate, so the whole space becomes a symplectic space. Now, if I think of this as a symplectic space, there is sort of the positive part of which H plus, which is consists of polynomials in Z, and there is this polar part H minus, and it's easy to see that they are Lagrangian subspaces with respect to this symplectic structure, and therefore this I can think of this space as T star H plus, the cotangent bundle space, and this then when I quantize it, I get using this polarization, then I get the Fock space of functions on this H plus. Therefore, the Fock space I'm talking about consists of functions on H plus, on polynomials with vector coefficients in H. A point therefore in H and H plus is denoted Q. It is such a polynomial, Q naught, Q1z, Q2z squared, etc. These are coefficients of finite direction, and Qs are vectors from H. And if you think of Gromovitz invariants, then Gromovitz invariants of target space X are also functions of similar variables, namely, if you think of Gromovitz invariants and gravitational descendants, they are known to be of functions of sequence of variables which belong to the cohomology, and think of large phase space. So the total descendant potential of X has this form. It is a genus exponential of the genus expansion H to G minus 1 F FG, and each FG is a formal function of the variables T0, T1, T2, etc. Well, if you like, Tk is the sum of Tk alpha phi alpha, where this is some basis in the cohomology, but it's a formal function of a sequence of vector variables in this sense, and therefore it can naturally think of it as a function on H plus. There is a little twist here, however, namely, I do identify this D with a function on H plus, but there is what I call the dilaton shift, namely, T0 is identified with Q0, T2 with Q2, etc., and Q1 is identified with T1 minus 1, and that's where this element, this non-zero vector, plays a role. So somehow the formalism requires this dilaton shift. So therefore, well, this convention is called the dilaton shift, and it means that this expression becomes kind of formal element of the Fock space, which is an exponential function of some formal series, and the formal series is defined. It's a germ of a formal function, not near the origin here, but near a shifted origin, the point this minus 1 times z. So this this vector polynomial. So that's what it means. Anyway, therefore we have the sum generating function of Gromit invariance embedded into this formalism as an element of some Fock, kind of formal element of Fock space. And now, twisting. So the twisted Gromit invariance, I said, they're determined by some bundle over the target and a choice of a multiplicative characteristic class. And through, well, I'll tell you later what they are, but the result of it is that that everything starts depending on S, or at least something starts depending on S here, namely, the, well, H stays the same, 1 stays the same, so the Poincaré pairing changes, namely, this time the Poincaré pairing is not just integral over x of product of AB, but times the characteristic class of that bundle E itself, and respectively the symplectic form changes, and so and Gromit invariance also also change, and we get therefore a family of such functions, which, formally speaking, they are elements of different Fock spaces because they deal with the same space with different symplectic, varying symplectic structures. So therefore, they belong to, we have a family of vectors in the family of Fock spaces. However, we can a little artificially perform identification of this Fock space in this way. So I can assign square roots of this S of E to A and B and re-express the standard products in this way, S of E A comma S of E square root B in terms of the original Poincaré pairing, and in this way therefore multiplication by this square root of the class identifies two symplectic spaces, now symplectic, different symplectic spaces for different S with the same standard one, the original one symplectically, and I can think of this as a family, so elements of the same Fock space. Now, I write down the formula that expresses this ds in terms of d0. And so my main interest is just in the formula itself, regardless of its meaning, but I'll tell you again what the meaning is. So it says that ds, or rather the quantum state within a one-dimensional space spanned by ds, can be expressed in terms of the node untwisted Gromit invariance by means of application of some operator with, I don't know, delta tilde hat, where delta, where delta is the following thing. It is square root of S of E times the product M is from 1 to infinity, S of E tensor L2 minus M, where, okay, so E is my bundle over the target space, S is my multiplicative characteristic class. Now L supposed to be there for some, it's line bundle, but the only thing that you need to know about that line bundle is that the differential class of L is Z. So what's left to explain now is actually three things. One of them is just to look at this expression, try to understand what it symbolizes. So is there any meaning of it informally? So does it tell us anything philosophical? And then also still, what is this tilde and what is this hat? And so what this, why does it make sense to apply this guy to one function, get another function? The third thing, of course, is what is DS and D naught? So what are these objects in real life? Okay, so, it means just one-dimensional stuff. There is actually a more precise formula where there is a constant factor here depending on S. I just don't want to write it down. There is some scalar factor here. And it means that one-dimensional subspaces spanned by it, though. So I just ignore the constant. Okay, so first of all, this expression is kind of reminiscent of the following point of view, heuristic point of view on Gromov-Witt invariance. There is a target space X, but one can think of the loop space in X as the domain of Fleur-Mohr theory, Fleur type homology. So think of Mohr theory on the loop space. There is S1 action there, it is a rotation of loops. And one can think of this loop space in the loop in the other sense, so this Lorentz series in Z, can think of it this way. So it is the cohomology of the loop space expressed in terms of at least H plus, expressed in terms of fixed point localization of this action. So Z becomes the Schwarzschild class of universal bundle, line bundle over BS1. So therefore, polynomials in Z is a coefficient ring of S1 equivariant cohomology theory, and therefore this loop space, or at least this H of Z, the polynomial part, is sort of equivariant. Think of formal neighborhood of fixed loops, that is X itself, in among all loops, and the equivariant cohomology of that neighborhood is this polynomial space. So now maybe I should tell you a few words about the way how, what are these twisted Gromov-Witt invariants. Usually Gromov-Witt invariants are defined as in this way. So we have a moduli space of stable maps to target space X. I suppress, so there is a genus, there is a number of mark points that suppress the degree. It means that I just sum over all the degrees. And we integrate some cohomology classes against virtual fundamental class in this space. And that's how we define Gromov-Witt invariants. What we integrate here are usually, well, it's it's pullbacks through the mark points or evaluation at mark points of cohomology classes of from the target space, or we can fit in the psi classes, powers of psi classes. The result are gravitational descendants, and this kind of integrals become formal, become Taylor coefficients of the formal functions, which I denoted here f g without s. So in the twisted Gromov-Witt theory, we do the following. So we so over this space m g n x, we have this universal curve, one extra mark point, so this is forgetting the last mark point. And there is evaluation at the last mark point with values n x. And if we have a bundle E over x, then we can pull it back here and push down here in sense of k theory. Therefore, we'll get evaluation star of E push forward here, which is an element of, can be interpreted as an element of K naught. And I denoted E G comma N. So it is therefore some kind of virtual vector bundle. The meaning is, well, what we are doing here is the following. Take a curve in X, restrict the bundle to it, and compute the space of global sections. Or more generally, compute the difference between H node and H1. So that's the meaning of this bundle. And so I can insert characteristic classes of this bundle everywhere, and therefore whatever my characteristic class S is, I can use this characteristic class of such bundle everywhere in all such correlators systematically as one of the integrands. And that means the twist Magrovian with invariance. Therefore, instead of the generating function D node as before, I get a new one depending on S. So that's what this DS means. Now, if you look again at this infinite product, then, think of now of this loop space in X, or rather, maybe think of holomorphic disk in X as some part of Fleur theory, so some gradient trajectory in Fleur theory, and restrict the bundle E in X to this curve and consider the space of global sections. It will be infinite dimensional space, but what is written here, this infinite product, is the class S computed for that infinite dimensional bundle, because really this L2 minus M is Fourier modes. This is just this is a decomposition of that infinite dimensional space into Fourier modes of loops and computing the equivariant version of the class S, because this Z is stands for S1 equivariant theory. Therefore, this bundle is a natural ingredient which occurs when you heuristically think of how to compute the Gromov-Witten invariance of a complete intersection given by a section of bundle E in terms of the ambient space. So you always get such infinite products. The heuristic picture based on Fleur theory tells you, therefore, that we should consider this expression, but you know that the answer that it suggests, the answer is wrong. So some place fits hypergeometric functions related to the mirror symmetry, but in principle, you know that this answer is not going to be correct. But therefore, this formal tells us that in some sense it is right. So this expression, if it is process somehow through the formalism we deal with here, becomes really correct answer, and not only in genus zero theory, which is directly related to loops, but even in higher genus theory. So what now let me explain therefore what is this tilde and hat. So what is the formalism? First, this tilde means some asymptotical interpretation of this expression. Namely, if I take the logarithm of delta, and think of S therefore its exponential function, so S is X little s of. So okay, suppose that X is suppose that E, for example, is a line bundle, and X means the first term class of that line bundle. Then S of E is X S of little S of X, where little S of X is the sum of SK X to K divided by K factorial, because these are the components of the Chern character. Therefore, there is some just Taylor series. And so in terms of this logarithm of S, logarithm of delta becomes the following. It's 1/2 of S of X plus the sum m is from 1 to infinity s of x minus mz. This is, therefore, think of it as some finite difference integration with a step z. And, you know, there's a standard way to interpret in terms of the ordinary integral, which involves the way that involves Bernoulli numbers. Namely, I can write it down as, is S of X, and is 1 half plus the sum E2 minus M Z D over DX. M is from 1 to infinity. Operator. And this is, well, what is written here, it's 1 over the sum of geometrical series. Huh? What? No, yeah. Minus 1 half. And, you know, this there is kind of, it's a singular expression. There is, if you expand it into a series, you know, it starts with 1 over differentiation. Therefore, what you do, you you apply anti-differentiation explicitly, and then you have this expression, which is, you know what it is. It is the Todd series. If you expand it into a Z-series, it spits Bernoulli numbers, and this 1 half kills the only odd terms there. So, therefore, this is a way to obtain an asymptotical expansion of this formal expression in Z. And that's what this tilde means. Therefore, logarithm tilde, logarithm delta tilde is interpreted as such an asymptotical expression. That's the first thing that you need to do. So therefore, interpret this asymptotically. And so, when you do this, in the end, therefore, the expression we get will be the following. It will be the sum will be the sum over S to M minus 1 minus L, the coefficients of this logarithm of that series, then B to M Bernoulli number divided by 2M factorial, Z to 2M minus 1, and turn L of E, and the sum over M and L. So, therefore, there is a series with kind of with prescribed coefficients of this expression Z to 2M minus 1 times the Chern components of the Chern character of the original bundle E. So, that's tilde. Now, what is this hat? So, these expressions Z to 2M minus 1 times Chern LE, so they can be considered as operators on this vector space H. Namely, I can multiply by power of Z in the space of Lorentz series, and I can multiply in the sense of ordinary cohomology algebra of the target space by this cohomology class, the component of the Chern character of the bundle E. So it's easy to see that this so this multiplication by the cohomology, even cohomology class on the target space, it is symmetric with respect to the Poincaré pairing. And multiplication by this power of Z is, it's because the power is odd, is actually anti-symmetric with respect to the symplectic form. So the result is that this application of the separator is anti-symmetric with respect to my symplectic structure. Therefore, it can be interpreted as infinitesimal symplectic transformation. And therefore, it corresponds to some quadratic Hamiltonian. You can easily write down, applying the separator gives you some quadratic Hamiltonian on the space H, and then you can quantize that by usual quantization. Well, there is a quadratic Hamiltonian, you can replace multiplication. So the quadratic Hamiltonian is a combination of expressions like P square, Q square, PQ, and you quantize them in the usual way. So this becomes second order differentiation. Q square becomes multiplication by Q square divided by H bar, and PQ becomes there is some normal ordering which is exactly here. So the PQ should be ordered this way. Yeah. So that's If I finish that sentence, therefore, what this formula, how this formula is interpreted, therefore, there is this this infinite product. You write it down asymptotically in this way. It becomes e to some infinite sum, and the terms of the sum are interpreted as quadratic Hamiltonians, which can be quantized. And so, what you have there are e to some infinite sum of differential operators up to the second order, and that's what you apply to denote in order to get this ds. So if you look at the operators here, they almost commute, but except one place, and so there is some gain ordering issue. So this there is one for m equal to zero. There is one over z term. You put it in I think first, but it does matter if I don't care about the multiplication constant, right? It's plus. Anyway, so this is the structure of the formula. How do you get this formula? What is the actual origin of it? Of course, it is Grothendieck-Riemann Roch applied to this picture. Essentially, what you need to do in order the goal is to express this kind of invariant in terms of untwisted ones when there is no this class. So what we need to know really how to express these characteristic classes of the such bundles in terms of the previous this psi classes and ordinary homology class of the target space, and that's what this local Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch formula does. It tells you how to express the push forward of the bundle here in terms of just in terms of fiber-wise integration upstairs. And of course, the Bernoulli numbers seem to be coming from exactly from Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch formula here, from the Todd class in this formula. So therefore, the proof is Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch, and in this sense, it is no different from what Faber and Panduripanda did in a similar situation where the bundle E was trivial. They were thinking of Hodge integrals for arbitrary target spaces, or even before Mumford did for the case when the target was the point to express Hodge integrals in terms of ordinary integrals. And that's, the proof actually follows literally to what is written in Mumford's 1993 paper about expressing Hodge integrals in terms of. So as long as you know the formula, the proof is not a problem. It's just literally repetition of Mumford's argument for computing Hodge integrals, Hodge classes in terms of psi classes. We're going to move toward orbifold theory. So let's discuss a little bit just what replacing manifolds with orbifolds, what it changes in general. So there is, therefore, the essence of this theorem is an application of Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch. There is some Grothendieck, some Riemann-Roch theorem, Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch theory on orbifolds, rather unpleasant one. But let's look at some classical variant of it. So, namely, let's look at Hirzebruch Riemann-Roch theorem, which deals with the following situation. Suppose that we have some manifold X with the vector bundle, and let pi be the map to the point, and what we want is to compute the push forward of it. That is an algebraic geometry, a holomorphic color characteristic of E over X. And so the Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem tells you that it should be can be computed as integral over X of Chern character of E times the Todd class of the tangent bundle of X. Here it is. Now, suppose that X is an orbifold. And E is an orbifold bundle. then still you can talk about the term character of E, which this time will take values over, will be defined over Q, over rationals. And similarly, the virtual tangent bundle of norbifolds is still defined, and you can talk about its dot class. And the fundamental class is defined over, everything defined over Q. And you can write down this right-hand side, this integral, but it is not equal to the holomorphic color characteristic of the orbi bundle, just wrong formula. More accurately, it's the first term in a longer formula, which is called the Kawasaki Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch. And let me describe some elements of this formula. So therefore, this is just the first approximation to it. So that's kind of the main new element that orbi folding brings into this picture. So first of all, the answer can be written as integral, but not over x, but over some new space, Ix, which is called the inertia orbifold. And to understand what it is, let's look at what an orbifold is locally. So locally, you know, it is quotient of a non-singular space by finite group. Therefore, there is a point x on norbifold. Then chart is some non-singular space, and the orbifold locally is a quotient by some local symmetry group, gamma x. Right. Now, if we pick some element g in that group, then of course it fixes everything in the group, fixes x, but there is some subspace. You can think of linear subspace, linear model of detection. It's a finite group, right? So there is some linear subspace which is fixed by G. And so, therefore, you have many such subspaces corresponding to different group elements, right? So in this inertia orbifold, what happens? You consider this disjoint union of all these fixed point subanifold, so the whole thing is a fixed point set for the identity element, but there are other subspaces. You consider, just imagine the state in different planes here, the disjoint union of those. And when you factorize by the group action, so which part, some of the subspace can be identified, some can be folded into something smaller, you get locally, again, some new orbifolds with components of different dimension. And so that's what this Ix is. Therefore, it locally consists of all such, so it has many components. The components locally come as quotients of such fixed point sets by the action of the stabilizer of this set. So therefore, you have such a thing. It is mapped, of course, to X, and over point X here, what you have, the fiber is the number of points in the fiber is a number of conjugacy classes. Here you can think of the representation of gamma x. But anyway, so this Kawasaki Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch formula, you can understand, you know, to write down right-hand side, so what should you put here? So you can understand it this way. So you think first that there is a global group, that x is the quotient of some manifold by globally defined finite group. And there is some orbi bundle here, which means there is a bundle here equivalent with respect to the group action. And what you're computing is the sort of holomorphic color characteristic of that bundle, but invariant part with respect to group action. So it computes the, first of all, what you can do, you can take some group element in gamma, and there is holomorphic Bott Lefschetz six-point formula, which computes the trace, the super trace of G, how it acts in the cohomology of the bundle. And you know how this formula looks like. It's sum of integrals over fixed points. It's sum No, it is the integral over fixed point submanifold of G of something. And then if you want to extract the invariance, not just the super trace, but the invariance, you should sum, take the average over the group elements. And then you can re-express the sum in terms of the quotient itself. So rather than just rearrange. Yeah? No, I'm saying how to write down, how to get the formula, the right formula. So what you imagine first, that there is a global action. And then there is this Lefschetz fixed point formula. And extracting invariance means that summing over the group elements. And now you can just rearrange the sum thinking of points in the quotient first. And then when you write down that, then it makes sense even if the action is not global. So because only the stabilizers of points are involved, and so therefore just that right hand side is correct. So this Kawasaki-Riemann-Roch formula, it is kind of Lefschetz fixed-point formula written in the absence of the global action. So you can imagine therefore how it looks like. I don't want to write exactly what is here, but I mentioned one ingredient. Of course, there is some Chern character, some kind of Todd, well, the Todd class of fixed-point components here, and there is both Lefschetz denominator, but just to mention what is this Kawasaki Chern character of E. So once again, there is it is some it's Chern character of some bundle over IX, or at least some virtual bundle. And what is that virtual bundle? You can think over a particular XG. Over a particular XG, so this bundle can be described as follows. So for each group element here, so therefore I'm thinking of this subspace. For each group element here, there is it acts somehow on the fibers of that bundle, and it has eigenvalues and eigenspaces, right? And the eigenvalues are of the form E2 2 pi I G divided by R, where R is the order of that group element, and G are, well, G ranges from 0 to R minus 1, right? And there are corresponding eigenspaces corresponding to this choice of eigenvalue. So we take the sum over G, this, maybe I write it down somewhere. So therefore, there's a sum over G, E to G, E to 2 pi I, G divided by R. And so if you take the Chern, it is some kind of linear combination of bundles with this coefficient, some virtual bundle over appropriate stratum in IX, appropriate fixed point component in IX. And if you take the Chern character of that, it will be the Kawasaki Chern character. It will feature in this formula. So, here, yes. The meaning is you have in algebraic geometry, there is a sheaf of sections of that orbit bundle, and you compute the holomorphic characteristic of that sheaf. If there is a global action, therefore, there is some larger space in the global action of finite group, and there is a bundle there. It means that you're computing cohomology spaces upstairs, consider the action of the group there, and take the invariance, and alternated sum of dimensions of the invariance. So anyway, so this is what just some example of what happens if you replace manifolds with orbifolds, what happens with Riemann-Roch-like statements. Let's go back to Gromov-Witten theory. First of all, the orbifold type Gromov-Witten invariants for orbifolds were introduced Actually, I think that they probably first were introduced in some letter of Kontsevich to Lev Borisov, but as usual, it was left unpublished. And so the construction then was reinvented by Chen Ruan, and the algebraic geometrical version, Abramovich, Gradle, and Vistoli, for instance, are responsible for foundation. Therefore, it is possible to replace, take X to be an orbifold, and generalize the concept of Gromov-Witt invariance to this situation. Now, therefore, we can try to guess. So maybe we should look then next to this definition of twisted Gromov-Witt invariance. So what happens here is the following. So yeah, there is a similar principle, similar picture. There is this modular space of stable maps. And I need to consider the universal curve over it. But it's not exactly what is just adding an extra mark point, because really that extra mark point could be an ordinary one or carry non-trivial orbifold structure. And really the what you need to here in order to have fibers as curves, you need to take that ordinary mark point, not orbifold type. Therefore it is, let me put some symbol here, some circle to emphasize that it's not the whole thing of that space, just some part of it. And then, huh? Yeah, it is some part. Yeah, it is some part of the. It means that I'm assuming an extra mark point is an ordinary one, not orbifold mark point, and forget it. Yeah. So therefore, there is this map. Then evaluation that mark point. In general, if I just take a general mark point, then evaluation will take values in Ix. But if it's an ordinary mark point, it will be x. See, this Ix is projected to x, but also X is sitting there as the part that comes from the main component, so this which corresponds to the first summon in that formula. So the evaluation takes values in X, and there is an orbit bundle here. I can pull it back, I can push it forward, everything is the same. Then I have some element of K theory here, and I can use its characteristic classes in intersection. So therefore, the twisting of the theory is well defined, and moreover, it is exactly what so this Euler classes of such bundles is exactly what is needed in applications. Those applications, motivating applications of the theory that I mentioned in the beginning. Now, therefore, the question is how to compute, if you try to come up with some kind of Riemann-Roch, quantum Riemann-Roch formula, we need to figure out how to compute these characteristic classes in terms of untwisted ones. And so it looks like, in general, it should be some nasty problem, because it is not just Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem. It's, there is just a general map of one orbifold into another orbifold, and you're pushing forward some orbit bundle, and we want to compute the, in cohomological terms, what is that orbit bundle is in, what's the characteristic class of that bundle. However, there is some, to understand that really the problem that we're dealing with here is a little bit eclectic. So what we really want in the end, we want, so the only case theoretic ingredient here is really this push forward of the bundle. We're computing the global sections of some bundle restricted to some curve. But then what we do in the end, we're not really computing this Kawasaki Riemann-Roch character, we're just computing the ordinary Chern character, or components of the Chern character, ordinary characteristic classes of that bundle. The bundle is an honest bundle, but what we need is not the whole thing. So this is, of course, is an orbifold, and also has its inertia orbifold with many components. And of course, an honest encoding of that orbit bundle in terms of cohomology would be some class of that larger formation. But it's not what we're doing. We're just taking its main ingredient, like in that first formula, and we need it in to feed it in into intersection theory, which is purely cohomological. So we're not really doing any K theory here. Yeah. And for that matter, really, this the Grothendieck Riemann-Roch that we need here becomes really just fiber-wise Kawasaki Hirzebruch Riemann-Roch. It means that really we just should take in account the so there are some mark points in the fiber which have orbifold nature, so the curves here which are fibers they are they have non-trivial orbifold structure. Yeah. Yeah, but in that real form, just fiber-wise. So what there is no any more complex. The base is an orbifold, but it's irrelevant. Yeah, it's local. Yeah, they degenerate, but yeah. So therefore, like before, yeah. But now there is some additional feature, namely there are some marked points have some orbifold structure, and some double points have some extra structure. You should take it into account the same way as it happens in Kawasaki-Riemann orthomorphism, but not more complicated than that. So therefore, in principle, therefore there is a way to handle this problem and to get some answer, and then try to process it through some formalism. Now, therefore, if there is a tool how to do that and there is a problem, we can try to guess the answer. So, therefore, let's look at the ingredients of the answer. So, there is already some formalism and some formula here. So, let's see. What should we take on the role of this vector space? Well, this is more or less clear. So, of course, we should take the cohomology of the inertia orbifold. That's what plays the role of replaces the cohomology of X in the orbifold theory. The identity element is, well, at each place actually there is some choice here. It's not quite obvious what you should take, because there is this inertial orbifold, it is a manifold with its cohomology, and there is unit element in that cohomology. But it's not what you should take. What you should really take is the main component here, X, and the unit element there, and extended by zero to other components. So that's the right choice of the element one here. So it's not one in the cohomology of X, but some non-zero vector, which just one in the cohomology of the original target space. Then we want carrier pairing. Again, it's a manifold, and there is some its own Poincaré pairing. It's more or less what you should take, not quite. So, namely, what you should twist it by the following thing. So, see, for each group element G here, there is also G inverse, and fixed points of G inverse are exactly the same as for G. But unless they are in the same conjugacy class, they correspond to different components of IX. They potentially represent different components in IX. And so, but there is an identification of those, canonical ones. And so this pairing involves this identification. Really, it is Poincaré pairing twisted by this identification of G going to G inverse. So therefore, there is some involution on IX, which corresponds to passing from G to G inverse, and that involution is included into the just before taking pairing, you should apply that involution. It's also some standard thing in orbifold Gromov-Witten theory. No, sigma, the fibers vary. So most of them are smooth, but some of them are singular, and some of them have double points. It is compact. It is compactified with, it is compact, but the fibers are singular with double points. It's the same as before. Yeah. But it's okay. So it's what Mumford did. So he managed to apply the Riemann-Roch theorem to the singular situation, and that's the essence of his work. Therefore, the first ingredients are quite clear, but next thing is a bit confusing. So what should you do with this? What is S of E here? There are some choices, right? So first of all, you can take the bundle E on X, pull it back to IX, and take its term, take its characteristic class. Or you can take the Kawasaki version of it when the different eigenvalues come with, eigenspaces come with different weights. It's hard to say what should be here. And also, when Well, in the end, all this formula means that we apply this these operators, and the operators involve therefore multiplication by cohomology classes in the cohomology of the target space. So what does it mean here? What kind of multiplication should we use? So there is an ordinary multiplication in the cohomology of this IX, it's one version, but there is also different multiplication, namely string cohomology, which mixes up different components of IX. Or there is quantum, quantum probably shouldn't be there, but still it is. So there are different multiplications, not quite clear what to do if you just try to guess what the formula is. So it turns out that it's not, actually really the formula is not exactly this one, it looks different. And so and this is the theorem of Zeng. So let me formulate it. What I'm saying, if you try to guess this way, then there is some kind of ramification, you don't know what to use, really. There are some, for instance, what multiplication and cohomology of IX you should use. And the answer actually is wrong. Whatever you use, it's wrong, actually. It's a, the formula is somewhat different. And so I'd like to, to write it down. So, for okay, over therefore, what I need to introduce some bundle E, which is somewhat similar to this Kawasaki bundle, but slightly different. Namely, it is a sum over therefore this bundle over IX, or rather even IX cross BS1. Is if I describe it by its restrictions to fixed point components of different strata corresponding to different fixed point components of group A, local group symmetry elements, then it is this way, it's a sum over the same EG or the eigenspaces tensor L to D divided by R. So where L is that universal line bundle over CP infinity. Therefore, note that there are fractional powers here. And also there is, introduce this notation, invariant. It is the part that corresponds to the index D equal to zero. And it leaves over X sitting in IX. It's non-trivial only there. No, I'm wrong. No, it leaves everywhere. But it corresponds to, it corresponds to the eigenvalue zero. And so the in the pairing here, I should use this invariant here. So. First thing. Therefore, this twisted Poincaré pairing involves only this invariant part of the bundle. But this, therefore, in the orbifold version of this theorem, therefore, there is invariant here. That's how formula changes. So there is this bundle E. So if you compute its chain character and compare it to Kawasaki, it is coincide with it for Z equal to 2 pi I. So therefore, what we have actually here is E to D over R Z instead of 2 pi I. So that's how it looks like. Therefore, it's an expression involving somehow, something from the loop space. Actually, if you think of the resulting formula, it makes sense. Again, if you interpret it in terms of the loop space. What really happens is the following. So if you think this is a chart, a local chart on the orbifold, and if you think of what should be loop space in the orbit fault. So there are, especially in the neighborhood of the fixed-point locus. So of course there are usual things. I mean, there is a constant loop mapped to some point, or it's small perturbation. So there is something which is kind of small loop around the point. There is another possibility, namely there is some point y, and there is a path connecting y with gy, where g is one of the local symmetry elements. And in the quotient, it will be a closed loop. Right? So therefore, if you like, it is loop connecting y to g square y, etc. So it becomes a loop on the cover after some repetitions. Therefore, in some sense, this loop is parameterized by a longer circle, r times longer r is the order of g, r times longer circle. And particularly, if you consider equivariant theory in the loop space with rotations of loops, so the circle that rotates such loops is longer, and that's why you get fractional powers of L in the answer in Fourier mode. So that's therefore, if you and the fixed point loops of this kind are exactly those constant paths which land in the fixed point locus of that group element. So really, this inertial orbit fault becomes a fixed point set in this version. And therefore, this answer can be interpreted as before in terms of loop space of the targets in this way. But then, when you process this through when you recall what this tilde is, when you process it through asymptotical expansion, then what you'll get will be the following. So in the end, the formula written in down terms looks this way. It is so therefore the logarithm delta tilde becomes the sum of s to m plus 1 plus l, minus 1 plus l, the sum is here over all m, all l, and also all d varying from 0 to r, and this expression written in terms of its restriction to this part in IS. So it's kind of down to earth in elementary terms. But what is what the new ingredient here, what is bm d over r? So bm turns out to be Bernoulli polynomial. So let's consider this. So this series expands, it's a Todd series, expands with Bernoulli coefficients. Now let's consider this new function, which depends on x, and expand it into T series, then the coefficients will be polynomials of x. So b0 is 1, b1 is x over 2 minus 1 half, etc. And there is some symmetry about the point x equal to 1 half. So instead of almost property of Bernoulli numbers to be zeros when m is odd, there is another symmetry property, this one, so bm of x 1 minus x is equal to minus 1 to m bm of x. And this property eventually assures that multiplication operators of this type are infinitesimal symplectic transformations in our formalism. But somehow, therefore, there is what's new in this formula, it's occurrence not Bernoulli numbers, but of Bernoulli polynomials evaluated at these fractional points. Yeah. There is one. So there is some. There is some problem with the first term, right? With one. Yeah, it should be some. I should probably subtract one half of here, I think. Yeah, all right, so it should be, probably I should subtract 1/2. No, all bm are there, yeah. Ah, is this problem? Okay. Yeah, probably this way. Yeah, right. Thank you. Right. No, there is also, I did probably something wrong with the first term. There is probably 1/2 it still should be removed. Yeah, but, yeah. Anyway, so therefore, there is the real numbers. And what is strange is what is the last thing that I'm going to say, though, you see, before that, there were Bernoulli numbers, and we knew where they come from. At least we thought that they knew. They would come from Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch theorem from Todd Klass in Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch applied on the universal curve. And here we, in the end, when we kind of, when Chen-Hua assembles all the ingredients of the formula, he comes up with this answer. Even so, Bernoulli polynomials do not occur in Kawasaki or any other form of Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch on that universal curve. And I don't know what to say about it. There are two suggestions. One of them is probably we should rethink Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch theorem on orbit folds. Maybe Bernoulli polynomials should occur there. We just don't see how. The other alternative that maybe it's actually wrong that they occur in this formula for that reason. Maybe it is just this Bernoulli numbers and Bernoulli polynomials come from somehow for a different reason and specifically deal with come from theory of curves, not just general Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch formulas. Or maybe both things should be true. Well, anyway, there is something here of general mathematical nature. So this Bernoulli polynomials occur unexpectedly, and so I invite you to think of this. Thank you.